from Bella Cynwyd to Camp Hill, Lansford to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the nuclear energy industry is asking for a massive bailout from state taxpayers. Former Public Utilities Commissioner Glenn Thomas is here for a Capital Watch discussion on why such bailouts are bad public policy. And it's June in Harrisburg. That means budget season. I'll have a town hall commentary on why the governor and lawmakers might actually get their job done on time this year. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania Superior Court has rejected an appeal by former State Attorney General Kathleen Kane, who is seeking to overturn her conviction for leaking secret grand jury information and then lying about it. Kane's appeal was based on a number of claims, including her insistence that she is the victim of selective prosecution. Kane's attorneys also argued the Montgomery County trial judge erred in denying her the ability to enter certain evidence into the record. Kane was the first Democrat and the first woman elected attorney general in Pennsylvania. Her brief tenure at the helm of the state's top law enforcement agency was marked by chaos and internal dissension. She resigned upon conviction, but has been fighting to have the verdict overturned. Her remaining course of action would be an appeal to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The current state attorney general, Josh Shapiro, announced this past week that he will release a grand jury report into allegations of sexual abuse in Pennsylvania's six Catholic dioceses. Church officials in each of those dioceses have agreed to release of the report. The church could have put up roadblocks, but by midweek, all had agreed that the 884-page report should be made public. In advance of that release, the Diocese of Erie already has posted the names of 57 individuals against whom internal investigations found credible allegations of child sexual abuse. Advance release of the report to diocesan officials was met with outrage by victim advocates, including State Representative Mark Rossi, himself an abuse victim. Rossi accused the judge in the case of catering to the church and blasted what he termed special treatment. The deadline for applying for property tax and rent relief for older and disabled adults in Pennsylvania is June 30th. The program provides a maximum standard rebate of $650, although supplemental payments can raise that to as high as $975. Eligible residents are those 65 or older, widows or widowers 50 or older, people over the age of 18 with certain disabilities. There is a $35,000 per year income limit for homeowners and $15,000 for renters. Half of Social Security income, though, is excluded. Information on the property tax and rent rebate program is available from district offices of the State Department of Revenue, County Area Agency on Aging's senior centers, or stop by your state legislators' offices. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. The nuclear energy industry is just the latest to show up at the state capitol asking for a taxpayer bailout. While a robust nuclear power industry would be beneficial, such a bailout would be just the latest example of state government interfering in the marketplace by picking winners and losers. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch look at the issue. Dave is joined by Kevin Shivers from the National Federation of Independent Business, and their guest panelist, former Public Utilities Commissioner Glenn Thomas. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Kevin Shivers, Executive State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Kevin, thanks for being on the show.
Good to be with you, David.
Energy is life. And no matter what it is that you're doing, whether you're an individual, a resident, or a manufacturer, or a small business owner, doing the things that you do requires energy. And so as we talk about, as we often do on the program, about competitiveness, about, you know, making Pennsylvania a great place to live and work, and start a business, and do all those things, energy is an important contributor to that. And so one of the things we want to tell the listeners about, one of the things that gives Pennsylvania a leg up is that we actually have competitive markets for electricity. And to explain more about how we got where we are and what's happening next, I want to welcome our special guest, Glenn Thomas from the GT Power Group, former public utility commissioner in Pennsylvania. Glenn, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So I guess I want to go back. It's like the superhero movie. The first one has to have the origin story. So how did we get to a competitive marketplace for electricity in Pennsylvania?
It's a pretty straightforward story. I mean, it was 1996. Tom Ridge was governor. At the time, I was his energy and environmental advisor. And he looked out at Pennsylvania's businesses and Pennsylvania's job climate and wanted to make it more competitive. And he saw an opportunity to do that through making our electricity markets restructured or competitive or deregulated, depending on what the phrase you want to use is.
Right.
So what we saw was Pennsylvania's rates were 15% above the national average. We saw wholesale rates that were dramatically cheaper than what the retail rates our end-use customers were paying. And we saw an opportunity based on changes at the federal level to restructure the way we acquired electricity in Pennsylvania so that people had a choice. People could choose where they got their electricity from. They could choose less expensive options. They could choose environmental options. There was an opportunity to take that decision out of basically the Public Utility Commission and put it in the homes and businesses of the Commonwealth. And that's what happened. That's why we passed the act in 1996, overwhelmingly in the legislature.
And this didn't happen overnight. It was phased in over a pretty prolonged period.
Well, the bill was passed in 1996, and then we went through a transition period that was dependent on each utility service territory, somewhere as quick as about 3 years, I think maybe it was the shortest, but somewhere as long as 8 years. And over that period, we basically transitioned Pennsylvania's utilities to the restructured market, and mostly what that meant was paying off what were called stranded costs. Stranded costs represented the investments the utilities made in anticipation of being a vertically integrated monopoly. The utilities went out and made investments in generation facilities.
And so when the idea was broached to them to say we're going to move to competitive markets, that those guys said, whoa, 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 you can't do that to us. You're changing the rules in the middle of the game. We've already made these investments based on our projected ability to recoup that from the ratepayer. And so that's why the deregulatory process, the transition process, included paying for these stranded costs. And so, as I understand it, that the ratepayers were surcharged, that they paid for the electricity that they used, but then also that they paid fees on top of that to compensate the utilities for the investments they'd made.
That's right. That's right. Those investments were made by the utilities on behalf of the customers with the expectation that they would receive recovery for those investments. Those opportunities to recover those investments would not be available in a competitive marketplace. So, yeah, the stranded costs were the way to transition the market to fully competitive markets, which we have now. And oh, by the way, during that transition period, rates were capped.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those stranded costs were recovered basically at rates that were the same as the levels prior to competition.
And how much are we talking about in terms of the stranded costs? How much was paid?
Billions. I want to say 10 to 14 billion in that range. We can get the exact number, but
yeah, but many billions of dollars.
Yes, okay. it was significant.
And so, flash forward 2006 or 7, the stranded costs are being paid back. The caps are coming off. We saw a little bit of a consumer pushback, a little bit at that period, right? As rates started to climb, but that was all because of the market forces that needed to flesh themselves out. Correct.
Yes. I mean, as those rate caps rolled off, I mean, not surprisingly, over a period of 8 years or so, the cost of some fuels went up. The cost of generation in some areas went up. And Pennsylvania was still under cap rates. I'm pleased to say now that rates have now come back down as natural gas prices have fallen and Pennsylvania has been able to benefit from the bounty of the Marcellus Shale. But yes, we went through a transition period when those rate caps rolled off. There was actually some pressure to revisit some aspects of the regulation. And I'm pleased to say that Pennsylvania resisted that. I mean, other states kind of fell prey to some of those arguments. New York probably stands out the most. But Pennsylvania said, no, we believe in markets. We think markets are the right way to go. And as a result, Pennsylvania's rates are now below the national average, whereas 20 years ago they were 15% above the national average. And we're seeing investment all over the state, and consumers have the ability to choose. It's been a terrific success, and we can all be very proud of where we are as a Commonwealth as a result of those efforts.
Glenn, you've got Kevin and me here representing business groups, and so, of course, we're really excited about having that kind of competitive advantage for job creators, but also just talking about household residents and individual users, that having lower rates, that puts money in their pocket every month by lowering their home electric bills.
Absolutely. I mean, wholesale generation rates in 2017 were less expensive than wholesale generation rates in 2000. I mean, think of any commodity that we deal with on a regular basis where that you can say that about. I mean, it's been absolutely phenomenal to see what competition has done for consumers. But even beyond price, which is a tremendous benefit, it's been the innovation as well that has really been incredible to see. I mean, we're seeing more and more folks, you know, choose, you know, renewable products. We're seeing more and more folks take advantage of some of the opportunities offered by competition to take advantage of time of use rates and things like that. But, you know, yes, it's price, but it's also innovation, and we've benefited on both levels in Pennsylvania.
Now, one of the things that happened again the mid 2000s was the exploration for and the subsequent drilling and harvesting of natural gas in Pennsylvania. How has the development of the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania affected electricity and energy rates that Pennsylvanians now are enjoying?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to tell my friends in the consumer advocate community that we're really in the golden age right now in terms of energy prices, whether it's electricity or natural gas. I mean, we have seen tremendous decreases in the cost of fuel, which has led to the tremendous decreases in the cost of generation. And, you know, Pennsylvania consumers and Pennsylvania businesses are benefiting from that. So the fortunate thing about Pennsylvania, because we restructured the market, Pennsylvania was in a position to take advantage of the discovery of Marcellus Shale, probably like no other state. We did not have the lag, if you will, that maybe some other states had, because we let the market respond, and the market responded very quickly. I mean, there's over 10 new power plants being built in the state. It's employing upwards of 6,000 people. We're talking investments, you know, north of $10 billion, all of at-risk capital. This is not guaranteed rate return utility capital. This is real money being bet on Pennsylvania, you know, that's at risk. And that should not be discounted. We have effectively transferred the risk of the most capital-intensive industry in the country from the backs of captive ratepayers to the marketplace. And Pennsylvanians have benefited tremendously from that.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Kevin Shivers from NFIB Pennsylvania. And with us, our special guest, Glenn Thomas from the GT Power Group, former Pennsylvania Public Utility Commissioner. So Glenn, the whole premise of moving to competitive markets and paying the stranded costs was that there would come a day certain when we would cross over into this new world of competitive markets. And after that point, that it would be as you said, that the risk would fall to the generators, to those who were participating in the marketplace.
Yep. And that day is here. I mean, actually that day here was here 10 years ago, and Pennsylvania's been able to benefit ever since.
But as we look across the country and we see the steps that are being taken, that have been taken in New York and in Illinois and now in New Jersey, where we have some energy generators crying poor and getting the politicians to intervene, essentially undoing those kinds of reforms, do you think that can happen here?
I mean, I think it would be a mistake for Pennsylvania to go down that road. We have seen, like we've discussed, tremendous benefits from electric competition. And we've been able to see those benefits because we've kept the decision about where to buy power in, you know, the homes and businesses throughout the Commonwealth. When you start interjecting state legislative mandates to either support certain kinds of power generation or to require the purchase of certain kinds of generation, that ultimately takes away from those market signals and really robs the homes and businesses of this state of the opportunity to do so for themselves. I have complete confidence in the Pennsylvania consumer to drive this marketplace to where it needs to be driven. And empowered customers, you know, have the ability to talk to their suppliers, get service on the terms they want. Maybe that service, you know, maybe those terms involve certain rate provisions. Maybe those terms involve certain generation sources. I mean, certainly I would encourage everybody to go on PennsylvaniaPowerSwitch.com, type in your zip code, take a look at how many environmental options or carbon-free options are available for you in your home. I did it in my home the other week, and I had 47 options available to me. And those were all options that allowed me to buy a certain portion of my power up to 100% from renewable or carbon-free sources. So those options are available for Pennsylvania's consumers if you want to choose to go that route. So, yes, the route of New Jersey, you know, New York and Illinois to go to a market where they're going to require their consumers to subsidize certain forms of generation, I think it would be a mistake for Pennsylvania to go down that route.
A week or so ago in Pennsylvania, there was stories in central Pennsylvania talking about how the latest auction, I guess, over at PJM dealing with purchasing of energy, Three Mile Island Nuclear Power Station, no buyers for their energy. Could you maybe explain what happened in that process to our listeners?
Sure. Yeah, what PJM does is they run something that they call the capacity auction. And what a capacity auction is, it's basically the mechanisms by which PJM ensures that we're going to have enough power to meet projected demand. So what PJM will do is they'll look out and they'll say, okay, here's how much power we need. And in this case, last week it was from June 1st, 2021 to May 31st, 2022. And they have an auction to determine what plants are going to be available to meet those needs, and plant owners bid in their facilities at the economic levels they feel necessary to sustain their operations. TMI did not clear that auction, meaning they did not get a bid, or they did not get a capacity award. Their bid was not accepted. And that's been the case for the last 3 years in the case of TMI. Exelon has said that TMI has not been financially healthy for the last 6 years, and they've slated it for closure in October of 2019 as a result.
And so should we be alarmed as consumers for affordable electricity that this facility is scheduled to be shuttered? Is that going to send ripples through the energy markets in Pennsylvania?
Whenever you talk about electricity, you want to talk about reliability and price. And when it comes to reliability, PJM has done the studies, and they've determined there's no reliability impacts associated with the closure of Three Mile Island, and it can close on schedule. So from a reliability standpoint, the lights will still stay on. There's plenty of power available to meet consumers' needs.
And that's important because, again, as David alluded to a moment ago, there is actually been conversation here in Pennsylvania that taxpayers, consumers in the state need to subsidize the refurbishment of that power plant, among other power nuclear power plants, correct?
Yes, and I mean, and that just doesn't square with the on-the-ground physics of the grid right now. I mean, right now we have reserve margins in excess of 25% in PJM, which is well above the 16% that's required by federal standards. So we have more than enough electricity capacity to meet the needs of Pennsylvania and the entire PJM region. So, yes, from a reliability standpoint, the closure of TMI, as PJM has concluded, will have no impact.
And that's really important, David, because in New Jersey, where they just passed this law, they talked about subsidizing the nuclear industry, and to the tune of, I think it was like $44 per year per home.
It was like $300 million right. per year total, which is sizable for
sure.
for consumers. And Glenn, getting back to what we said earlier, these really are business decisions. And so if there's an outmoded facility that's no longer competitive and it's the smart business decision to shutter it, then that's the decision that the business will make. And that's, you know, that function, that market function, I think of as being almost like a kidney function in the body. It's how it separates what we need from what we don't. And so, no, I don't think that there's anything, there shouldn't be anything alarming about those kinds of changes happening in the marketplace, especially as new capacity is coming online.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And the other thing I'll speak to, I mean, I know there's been a lot of conversation, particularly in the mid-state, about job loss and tax base and things like that. And it takes a long time to close a nuclear power plant. I mean, I've seen estimates of 8 to 15 years requiring, you know, upwards of 600-some employees. So in terms of the local impact, particularly in regards to a nuclear power station, which has significantly more closure-related issues than other facilities, I think, you know, some of the reports about immediately doom and gloom are probably overstated, just because the process associated with moving a plant from operation to closure, like TMI, particularly given TMI's history, is going to be a very long process.
Well, it's all very interesting stuff, and this is just, you know, what we're grappling with here at the state capitol right now. And again, I just think it's important to, you know, to take the long view. And just on that point, Glenn, where can we go? Where can this continued market dynamic take Pennsylvania in terms of our energy future?
Yeah, and that's the most exciting thing about it, David. I mean, it's really up to the consumers of this state where we go with this thing. Because the fact of the matter is we have the groundwork in place. We have a law that has served Pennsylvania well for the last 22 years. You know, we've transitioned our industry. And don't underestimate how challenging it was to transition that industry to where we are right now. We talked about the history, but we were really changing the direction of a tanker ship here.
Yes.
And we have it completely moving in the other direction. And that's why I get so nervous and so concerned when there's conversation, you know, about changing the direction of the ship when we have it going in the right direction now. You know, right now, the you know, where this market is headed is in the hands of the consumers, and they'll drive it to where it belongs. And guess what? The market will respond. You know, companies will begin to innovate. You know, as we've already seen, you know, consumers have spoken. They want, you know, low prices. Look at what we've seen. We've seen the most efficient, you know, power plants in the history of the globe built in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
As a result of this, that's the type of innovation we want to see, because ultimately that makes Pennsylvania more competitive. And if New Jersey, New York, and Illinois and other states want to go in a different direction, that just makes Pennsylvania all the more attractive place to live and work.
Amen. Amen to that. Well, Glenn, this has been really enlightening. Thank you so much for being with us. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your work and the things that you're doing?
Sure. They can go to gtpowergroup.com. You know, they could, you know, just Google my name and you'll probably get it, and be happy to talk energy issues with anybody who would like to.
Outstanding.
Appreciate the opportunity to be with you this afternoon.
That's great stuff. Hey, Kevin, where can people go to learn more about you?
Sure. They can visit nfib.com/PA, or they can join the conversation on Twitter at @NFIB_PA.
And as always, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Kevin and me, thanks again to Glenn Thomas, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. It is June, and for most Pennsylvanians, that means the start of the summer vacation season. But under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg, it is the one month of the year when the governor and lawmakers get serious about crafting a new state budget. The state's fiscal year runs from July 1st to June 30th, and it is the primary constitutional responsibility of the governor and the legislature to have a new budget in place when the sun rises over Penn's Woods on the first morning of July. Well, that has never happened during Governor Tom Wolf's tenure. 3 years ago, he presided over the longest budget stalemate in state history. That would be hard to top, but last year, the General Assembly passed a spending plan, but not a revenue plan. That backwards approach to budgeting resulted in yet another state budget crisis. Two factors drive the annual budget drama. State government spends beyond its means, and voters have simultaneously elected, to quote the Huffington Post, the most liberal governor in America and one of the most conservative legislatures in modern state history. Governor Wolf triggered the budget crisis his first year in office by proposing tax increases greater than the sum total of tax hikes proposed by the governors of all 49 other states. Republicans, basking in historic majorities, dug in and successfully fought off most of the governor's proposed tax hikes. Wolf is nothing if not persistent. Each year, including this year, he proposes more and more taxes, including a job-crushing so-called severance tax on Marcellus Shell drillers. House Republicans have stood strong against the governor's spend, tax, and spend more agenda, but often have had to defend their flank against Senate Republican leadership, which tends to cave in to significant parts of the governor's agenda. At the heart of the political disagreement is the path each has taken to their current offices. Governor Wolf tacked to the extreme left to win his primary 4 years ago, and thus is working to deliver to those in his party addicted to government spending. Republicans, meanwhile, run on a platform calling for fiscal restraint and lower taxes. Most, but not all, fight for those principles when they arrive in Harrisburg. Then there is the problem of state government spending beyond our means. Hundreds of millions of dollars are added each year to the public education budget with no corresponding demand for improved performance. The governor vetoes even modest efforts to reform an exponentially growing welfare system, and none of this addresses a public pension system now over $60 billion underfunded. All of this leaves precious few resources for dealing with serious problems like confronting the opioid crisis and providing the money needed to harden security at school buildings across the state. Add into this bubbling cauldron of overspending and competing political dynamics, gubernatorial and legislative elections, and you might expect yet another missed budget deadline this year. Oddly enough, this just might be the year when the job gets done on time. Yes, Governor Wolf has again proposed big spending increases. Yes, once more, he is calling for a punitive severance tax. And yes, even Republicans have some new spending they would like to put into the budget. Whereas in the past, proposed spending has exceeded projected income by billions, this year the gap is a few hundred million. The exact number fluctuates and has been impacted by a recent court decision, but the combatants start out closer together than in past years. Federal tax cuts and the booming Trump economy have resulted in a significant revenue surplus in the current fiscal year, meaning budget makers will not have to backfill a deficit and will have more money to work with in the 2018-2019 fiscal year. While sometimes a budget stalemate is politically helpful in that politicians can go back to their constituents and claim they are fighting for them in Harrisburg, the pain caused by the budget battles of the past 3 years has most involved in the process wanting to get the job done on time with as little fuss as possible. Both sides are hoping for an advantage by putting off the big battles until next year. Republicans see Scott Wagner in the governor's office, and Democrats pine for a renewed mandate for Tom Wolf. Either way, it appears like Pennsylvanians will be spared episode 4 of Budget Wars. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGET-AM and WGTY-FM in Gettysburg, along with WVMM-FM in Grantham, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.